Good afternoon and welcome to Speaking in Maine here on MPBN Radio. I'm Lindsay Maynard. Today we take you to the Strand Theater in Rockland for an address from Jamie Nambosny, an advocate for bullied students across the United States. Nambosny will speak about his own experiences as a child after being harassed and severely injured in middle school for being gay. The Southern Poverty Law Center produced a documentary entitled Bullied, A Student, A School, and a Case That Made History about Nambosny and his work. Please note that this documentary should not be confused with the 2012 Lee Hirsch documentary Bully, which was released by the Weinstein Company. Nambosny was in Maine for a week speaking to students at various schools across the state, and his talk was sponsored by Out As I Want to Be. This program was pre-recorded for broadcast at this time. This program will be archived on our website, mpbn.net. Click on Audio on Demand to hear the program again at your convenience or to access many other past Speaking in Maine programs. This program will also be available as a podcast. Please note that language contained in this program may be offensive to some listeners, and discretion is advised.
Wow. This has been one incredible week, and I really appreciate the applause and welcoming me here to Maine. I will be very honest with you. I've done a lot of community events around the country in major cities, and I will tell you that most of them, almost all of them, don't have the kind of turnout that that Maine had today. So you guys should be very proud. And I want to thank everybody responsible for bringing me here, from Out to Trekkers and all of the schools who agreed to let me in and let me share my message. I'm going to share some of that tonight about what that's been like, and it's been absolutely an incredible journey. You have some incredibly brave and wonderful kids here in Maine, and I've been very impressed continually with every school that I've spoken to, at the kids that I've met and the things that are happening here in the Maine schools. So one of the things that I want to start by talking about is the fact that I begin every one of my educational sessions in schools by asking students of some basic questions about what's happening in their schools. And I'll be honest, when I started doing this, I wanted to get an assessment myself about what the schools were like, what was the environment like. And when I started asking the questions and finding that I was getting the same answers everywhere, it didn't matter whether I was in a small area, a small town, a rural area, a suburb, or a major city, the same environment existed pretty much for kids across this country. And one of the things that after I figured this out, I didn't have to continue to ask the questions for that, but one of the things that astounded me was the fact that the students were not surprised by the answers, but the staff and the administration of the schools, jaws would drop open when they'd watch the hands go up and I'd ask the questions. And I'll let you know what those questions are and approximately what percentage of kids are answering yes to these questions. So my first question that I ask is, how many of you have heard somebody say, "That's so gay," in the last week? And I probably get 85%, 90% of them to raise their hands for that. I then ask how many of them have heard the words "faggot" or "dyke" in the last week. And again, it's probably 85, 90%. I then ask how many of them have heard the word "retard" in the last week. 100% of them raised their hand. And then I ask them how many have heard the words "bitch," "slut," or "whore." And again, it's 85 to 90% of the hands go up. And my next question is, how many of them have seen those words used against their classmates on the internet? And I'm astounded by sometimes it's up to 70% of them are raising their hands and saying they're seeing these things said about their classmates on the internet. And my final question that I ask at every school is, how many of you think that every student comes here feeling safe and welcome every day? Not one hand goes up. And so that tells me we have a long way to go as far as making our schools a safe place. And a lot of people say, well, it's not as bad as it was for you because it's only verbal harassment. Let me tell you right now, folks, that verbal harassment is the worst kind. Verbal harassment are basically weapons. Words are weapons that can wound you on the inside and slowly kill you. And for so many of our young people today, it is killing them. I just read about another suicide back home in my home state of Minnesota today on Facebook. Another young woman took her life after being viciously attacked and bullied on Facebook. This is a serious issue, and we need to come together as a community to tackle this issue. And that's why I'm so glad to be here and so glad to be part of this community this week to really begin a conversation. But I'm one person who will be gone at the end of this week, and all of you need to make sure that the schools continue this conversation, that this doesn't get lost with all of the other things that everybody I know has to do. And so tonight I want to talk about what needs to be done overall, starting with what we need to do to prevent bullying and harassment in our schools, to a comprehensive approach that needs to be taken, and finally to what needs to happen as far as the community and environmental response that we need, what we need to do as a community to stop the environment that's being created that's causing this environment to exist in our schools. So I'll start by talking about prevention. Prevention is something that I don't think I have to tell all of you this, but the United States seems to be very good at crisis management and not very good at prevention. We'd rather spend 10 times more money dealing with a crisis than we would spending 10% of that money to prevent a problem. But this is an issue that absolutely can and should be prevented. And there's three basic things I want to talk about tonight that I think absolutely are critical to preventing this issue. The very first thing is we need to teach our kids the skill of empathy. This is something that a lot of times we're not very good at as adults. And yet it is the basic thing that every study shows has to be in place for kids to stop this behavior or to not start this behavior. There was a study done in Canada around the issue of empathy, and they brought an infant into a kindergarten classroom for 1 hour every week for 5 years. And the whole point was to ask those students what the infant was thinking and feeling. And, you know, in the beginning, the kids would say things like the baby's tired or the baby's hungry or the baby pooped itself, you know, things that a kindergartner would say about a baby. But as the baby grew up and the kids got older, it got more complex. I mean, they could see that the baby was agitated when a toy was taken away, or the baby was sad when the mom left the room and the baby didn't know where she went. And they did a study and they found that there was an increase in measurable empathy of 40% by the end of the study in fifth grade. And that's amazing, but what really interested me was the follow-up study they did, where they went back with the same two groups of kids. They had a control group and the group that went through the empathy study when these kids were in ninth grade. And in ninth grade, they looked at the amount of harassment and bullying happening in the schools. And I was astounded by this. But there was a 70% decrease in the amount of harassment and bullying happening with the group that had the empathy training. And not only that, but the types and the severity of the harassment and bullying was greatly diminished. So as opposed to groups of kids picking on relentlessly and repeatedly one child, there may have been a spat between two kids where somebody said mean things to another kid and it got resolved. And instead of it becoming violent and kids being actually pushed around and hit, most of the stuff in the group where they had the empathy training was verbal in nature, and it was usually dealt with and didn't escalate. And to me, this made perfect sense. What happened in my school was that people rarely said things to my face. They rarely hit me when they could see me and look into my eyes. They rarely threw things at me from in the front, because it's really hard to look a human being in the eye and treat them the way that I was treated and the way that so many kids are treated. And we need to teach kids to think about how their actions and words affect other kids. That's the first thing that we need to do as far as this issue of prevention. The next thing that we need to do when we're talking about prevention is we have to teach kids about the world that they will live in, not the world that some people want them to live in, and not the world that they lived in 40 years ago, but the world that exists today. Kids are not being prepared for the diversity that they're going to encounter when they're adults. And I'm talking about all kinds of diversity, not just sexual orientation, but racial diversity, religious diversity, ethnic diversity. And I've seen this firsthand. At Wells Fargo, I used to work at Wells Fargo prior to doing the work that I do now. And I was in a training environment where I was training personal bankers to go out and work in stores. And we'd have some of these kids just graduating out of college, grew up in small towns, went to small town colleges, and then would come to the big city of Minneapolis to work at the big bank, Wells Fargo. And I will not forget the day that I was doing an orientation class explaining that we had a prayer room on site for anybody to use. And one of the young women raised her hand, and there was two Muslim students in her class, and they were both women wearing the hijab, so that she knew who they were. And she said, "Why are we allowing the terrorists to pray in our building? I don't understand." And I had to take her aside and repeatedly talk to her until the point where she was terminated, because she didn't understand that the world that she was going to live in was different than the world she grew up in. Nobody taught her that there were different people in the world, and that wasn't something to be feared, but something to be respected. And she didn't survive. And the other thing that happened to me there, and this was as I was there working as an openly gay man during the month of June, which most of you probably know is Pride Month, and I was talking to them about the different things that Wells Fargo was participating in, and I had one young man who didn't say anything at the time but complained to HR that we were promoting homosexuality and that he'd like to start a group that was people against homosexuality. And Wells Fargo HR handled this very appropriately and told him no. And that Wells Fargo celebrated diversity and was not afraid of it, and if that was something he couldn't handle, he needed to leave. But my point in all this, folks, is that so often our schools are failing in teaching our kids about the diversity that they're going to live in, not only as adults, but as children. I spoke at a school in Ohio, and I finished talking, and one of the things I talked to the kids about was the fact that some of their classmates may have gay and lesbian parents. I just mentioned it once. And I had a young man come up to me in tears afterwards in his football letterman's jacket and said, "This was the first time anyone at the school has ever talked about my family." He was adopted by two gay men when he was 3 years old after being abandoned by his birth mother. And to me, that was astounding. But the fact that nobody had ever mentioned the fact that there may be other parents besides a heterosexual mom and a father. Today, kids are being raised by their grandparents, by aunts and uncles, by single parents, by foster parents, all kinds of families. And you know what? Every one of those families deserves love and respect for what they're giving those kids. And the fact that this kid didn't get that is a problem. The fact that this kid didn't get that is a problem. The final thing I want to talk about, I think, is a particularly big issue, and it's one that no one really is facing in this country. And that is this: I don't believe that we actually have a problem with homophobia in our schools. Any of you shocked to hear me say that? We have a problem with sexism. And let me tell you why. Our kids are not coming to school in second grade with shirts that say, "I'm not gay, but my boyfriend is." They're not. You can check. I've asked. But the kids who get harassed at an early age are the kids who don't act like boys are supposed to act or girls are supposed to act. And unfortunately, it's not just kids that put those kids in line and tell them how they're supposed to behave. I think we can all remember being somewhere in a grade school or even younger and having people say to us, "Boys don't do that. Girls don't act like that. Boys don't play with those toys. Girls don't dress like that." And we've come a long way in the last 50 to 60 years with women. Women have a lot more options of what they can wear, what they can do. But let me be clear. If a girl or a woman either does something better than a man or takes opportunity away from a man, she is quickly also put back in her place. And we absolutely need to tackle this issue. And this is not just an issue that affects GLBT kids, although I think they are mostly affected a lot of times in our schools. But it affects all of the straight boys who like theater, and all the girls who want to play sports, and all the girls who want to be in the woodshop class. And kids need to be celebrated for who they are and not told that who they are is not okay. And it breaks my heart when I see people do this. But the reality is, folks, every single one of us in this room is sexist. Every one of us is homophobic, and every one of us is racist. There's no way those things do not exist inside of us when we're raised in the culture that we're raised in. And it is our job every single day to combat the messages that we have inside of us and to live our life the best way that we can. And that's where it starts. It doesn't start by telling everybody else how to live their life. It starts by looking at the insides of us and taking on those issues. And it's not easy. I know I struggle with this issue, and it's in a very minor way, but it's the best way that I can explain this with my nieces and nephews. I've got 6 nieces and nephews and 2 godkids. When I buy presents, I agonize over whether I'm being sexist in my choices. If the boy wants a truck, isn't it okay for me to get him a truck? Or if the girl wants a doll, isn't that okay? Or should I be getting them a gender-neutral toy so that I'm not participating? And the reality, folks, is the fact that I'm thinking about this, I think, is a step forward. because too often that doesn't happen. But that's a serious issue, and we all need to be part of that solution. And that's the three things that I think are the major things that if we did properly, we would prevent 99% of the bullying and harassment that we have going on in our schools. The next thing I want to talk about is a comprehensive approach to bullying and harassment. Right now, when schools deal with bullying and harassment, they punish the bully and send everybody back to class and hope it all just works out. Well, I'm going to tell you right now, it doesn't work out. The reality is that there's a lot of different parts to this that we're missing. The very first thing is that we need to treat all of the pieces. And we need to help the victims, and we need to make sure they're safe, but we also need to make sure they're not internalizing the messages that they're giving. Because too often, kids end up coming away from this damaged for life because of those messages and never feeling good enough. But if we just do that, we're missing half of the equation. Because the reality is that the other half of the equation is the kids who are doing the bullying and harassment need help too. Kids don't wake up one day and decide to be mean. Something has happened in those children's lives that's caused them to act out in the way that they're acting out. Whether it be they're watching their parents beat the crap out of each other at home, they've got a sibling who's beating on them, they've been bullied and harassed for 4, 5, 6, 7 years and they're tired of it. But something is going on in their life and we need to ask them what it is. We need to intervene and help that child too, otherwise we're failing half of this equation. When I started doing this work, I was firmly convinced that if I could just make all of the kids who are being bullied and harassed stand up and assert their rights, this issue would be solved. And I quickly realized that most of those kids don't have what it takes to do that. So many of them are so damaged, they start believing that they're deserving what they get. And I quickly came to realize as I was out in the schools that it was the other kids, not the kids who were doing the harassment, not the kids who were being harassed, but all of the other kids in the middle that I really needed to reach. Because if you can get the huge percent of kids in schools who are not doing this to stand up to those that are, you can solve this problem. Because the reality is if I put 100 teachers in a room from a school and said, tell me who's being bullied, where it's happening, when it's happening, how it's happening, who it's happening to, I would get very few answers. But if I put 100 kids in a room from any school, I could get all those answers. Because harassment is not happening typically in front of teachers, in front of administrators. It's happening when they're not around. And the reality is if we create another program or another rule or another law, it's like any other rule that's forced upon kids. But if we create a movement, when we ask the kids, what do you want to do to solve this? And I'll tell you, I've been asking kids that. And I've been amazed by the response. Kids know what it takes to do this. A lot of times way better than any of us will ever know. I want to tell you a couple of stories of things that kids have done. I was in upstate New York, in Hannibal, New York, which nobody in New York seems to know where it is, so I don't expect any of you to, but it's way upstate New York, and I was invited there, and I was told a couple of things before I came out. I was told that there was a 9th grade student who started the Gay Straight Alliance in his school. I was told in the 10th grade, he went to a school board, brought them policies, really great policies, of bullying and harassment policies that they should adopt, and they did it. And in 11th grade, he single-handedly wrote a grant to bring me in to speak after seeing my movie. And I went there with some assumptions. I assumed that this young man was gay. I assumed that he'd been harassed. And I assumed that's why he was doing everything he was doing. And I got there, and I met a 6'7" straight football player. Not what I was expecting. And I had lunch with this young man, and I said, you know, tell me what's going on. Why did you do this? This is amazing. I'm so proud that you've done this. And he said, 10 years ago, my brother went to this school. He was harassed horrifically since he was in grade school because he was gay. And in 10th grade, he got beat up so bad, they fractured his skull and broke his nose. And when my brother was able, he ran away to New York City and never came back. And he said, I made a decision the day that I entered the school that no child would ever go through that again. And he single-handedly changed his school. He had to lead the school into the areas that they needed to be, but he did that by himself. And there's been teachers that told me there that they were amazed by this, that they've been trying and trying and trying, but because he took this on as a student, he was able to make those changes. Unfortunately, I asked him, what happened to your brother? He said, my brother still lives in New York. He's homeless. He's prostituting and he's addicted to drugs. For him, life never got better. Another story that I want to share with you is a group of kids in Pennsylvania. I go to a lot of places, and I've had a lot of talks today. I apologize. And I went there 2.5 months after there was a suicide of a young woman who was horrifically bullied on Facebook. And things were said to her like that the world would be better off without her, she should just kill herself and get it over with, and that she was so ugly God wouldn't even look at her. This young woman took her life, and 2.5 months later, I was in front of the student body there. And afterwards, there was a group of students that wanted to meet with me and asked if they could talk to me about their plan to stop cyberbullying, and I said, I would love to. And I went into this meeting probably like a lot of adults when kids say they want to do something like stop cyberbullying, believing that they had all this energy but really doubtful that they were going to be able to do this. And I said, so what are you going to do? And they said, we're going to divide up the school and we're going to monitor the accounts of all of our classmates. We're going to look at their walls and make sure that they're not harassing and bullying each other. And I said, wow, that's amazing. And so you're going to write all this down and give it to the principal? And they said, no, we're going to stop it when it happens. We're going to say something right there and we're going to report it to Facebook. And I was astonished. And I left there, you know, wishing them well and hoping that they did this. But like a lot of things, I didn't know that they would actually follow through with this. It's a lot of work, I thought. 3 weeks later, I got a phone call from their guidance department. And they said, things have changed drastically in the last 3 weeks. They said, Mondays usually were filled with all of the drama that happened on the internet, rolling over into the schools, fights would break out, all the gossip and drama that came from the internet would be happening all of Monday morning, and they had to deal with all that before they could get to the task of actually teaching. And this had all changed. And not only were these kids dealing with the harassment and bullying, but kids were saying negative things like often kids do about how they were ugly or that they were stupid. And these kids were saying, no, you're not stupid. You're one of the smartest kids in the school. Don't say that. You're not ugly. And they made this huge change. It was a culture change in this school. And if I asked 100 teachers in a room, can you tell me how we can stop cyberbullying? I can guarantee you that they wouldn't have thought of monitoring Facebook. And I can also guarantee you that even if they had, they probably couldn't have all done it. Right? But kids know. And we need to put kids back at the center of this issue. Because the reality is, all of us adults, we mean well. We want to solve this issue, but it's going to take the kids to figure out what needs to happen, but it's also going to take those same kids to implement this. Because this cannot be a top-down approach. It must come from the kids. And we absolutely need great leaders and great teachers to help with this. Because without that, we can see the kind of things that can happen. And I met a lot of great people here this week that care a lot about the kids. And I'm really excited about the things that'll happen. I've been astounded by some of the responses of some of the students. At this point, I've had over 100 friend requests from area kids and over 30 messages from kids. From anything from telling me their own stories of bullying to saying they finally have the courage to come out. Amazing things are happening. And now I want to talk about the bigger issue here, which is what kind of an environment is being created to make this happen in the schools. Because kids don't go to schools and take classes on being homophobes and racists and bigoted kids. They don't. They're getting this from somewhere and they're coming to school. And the results, unfortunately, sometimes are deadly. And we need to do a better job as adults of modeling the behavior that we want to see in our kids. I think that things are, for me, in my lifetime, are at an all-time high of everybody seeming to want to discuss whether or not I should exist as a human being because I'm a gay man. And to be honest, I'm tired of it. I'm also tired of the fact that people think that religious freedom in this country means imposing their views on other people. I don't know where we went wrong in that, but I too have read the Constitution, and that's not my interpretation of that bill, of that rule. So the other thing, and I think that this has been more in the last 30 years, and I think the big issue here, folks, is that we've got probably what I would consider a cultural crisis happening. There's a lot of people in this country who have been in power for a long time, and they're seeing that things are changing fast, and they don't like it. I don't know if any of you saw that the senator from North Carolina who sponsored the anti-gay marriage bill, his wife just said that the reason he did it was to preserve the Caucasian race. If that doesn't tell you what the motives of these people are, I don't know what will. And I couldn't make this up. I mean, it's way too good to make up. But the point that she made, and she did this without knowing she was being recorded, was that white people built this country, we made the laws, and we're not going to give it away to other people. I won't repeat the words that she used, but we're not going to give it away to other people. And that's why he sponsored the gay marriage bill. The reality is we need to start modeling that behavior and having civilized conversations. We also need to pass laws that don't make GLBT people second-class citizens. I know here in Maine, just like in my home state of Minnesota, you're going to be voting. You're voting on a positive one. We're voting on a negative one. But hopefully the results are the same, which is a further step in the direction of equality for all people. But the reality is when Proposition 8 was introduced in California, bullying of GLBT kids went up 13%. Well, when you've got everybody in the state debating about whether or not you should exist and whether you should have the same rights as everybody else, kids are not going to come to school and listen to the message of be respectful. They're going to come to school and listen to the things their parents are saying, the things that they're hearing in their places of worship, and the things they're hearing from their politicians. That's truly the issue. And people say to me all the time, why is an anti-bullying advocate talking about GLBT equality? And I'll tell you, it's because when you have people debating about whether you should exist, there are kids out there who will start believing they shouldn't. And too many of them are taking their own lives. And it breaks my heart. And once we have full equality in this country, we know that just like with racial equality, the laws didn't change overnight everything. But at least we're moving in the right direction. But I'll tell you folks, we're not moving fast enough. And we need to fight like hell to make sure that your proposition here passes and that mine doesn't. And that we're working towards this so that our kids can feel like they're okay. Because I'll tell you what's going to happen. If Maine passes this by popular referendum, it'll be the first time in the country that people have voted on this issue. And remember when a court decided, everybody stood up, you can't have radical courts deciding this. You need legislatures to decide this. Okay, we had legislatures decide this issue. Wait a minute, that's not the people. We need people to decide this. I don't know what the hell they're going to say next, but I know they're not going to be happy about it. But it's going to send a strong message to every kid in this state that who they are is okay and that Maine is a place for them. And that is the message that we need to be sending to our young people. With that, I want to open it up to your questions. Thank you. Again, if you could come up to the mics and state your name and then ask your question.
Thank you so much. It just brings tears to my eyes just to have this happening. It's so powerful. I'm one of nine kids, and I have two gay brothers, one who is successfully gay, if you will, who's, you know, and another who's addicted, and anyway. And I want to say, I want to bring up the issue of Title IX. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the question is, I guess, to speak to that. I years ago, a private Catholic school, no longer Catholic, a lot of harassment, John Baptist High School in Bangor, Maine. We did a parent group. We got Title IX, Office for Civil Rights, changed it in a year, and it completely changed it. It was a harassing, bullying, sadistic, the usual. Yeah. And that was year 2000 in a very prestigious private high school. So I guess what I would like to know is more about how Title IX factors in, because that is what gave us our kind of, you know, the leverage.
Absolutely. And I think that your question is a great one, because what's happening around the country is the federal government is having to get involved where local governments will not. And the Office of Civil Rights has been doing some phenomenal things. I don't know how many of you heard about the Anoka Hennepin situation in my home state of Minnesota, but the school had decided that they wanted to pursue at first a no-promo-homo policy, which meant nobody could promote homosexuality in school, and then they went to a neutrality policy, which, to me, how can you have a neutrality policy about a group of kids who are suffering in your school? And unfortunately, they had seven suicides in that school in 2 years. And so the Office of Civil Rights has done an investigation and forced the school to change, as well as, I'm very proud to say, the Southern Poverty Law Center and the National Center for Lesbian Rights also brought a suit against the school. And so Title IX is being used and should be being used around the country, especially when we're talking about gender bias in schools. And a lot of what they're classifying, because there's no federal law protecting homosexual students or bisexual, lesbian students, I will be tell you right now, one of the really exciting things that happened in the last week was that the federal government has decided that transgender students are covered under sex discrimination for the first time. So we are making progress, but under federal law, how we're being able to get around and help our gay, lesbian, bi kids is by talking about gender stereotyping, because typically kids are being harassed, like I said, not because they're coming out and saying they're gay, but because they're not fitting into gender norms, and that's considered gender stereotyping, and we can use that under the federal law. But if a child comes out and is fitting gender norms and is homosexual and is being harassed, they're not covered federally. You're very lucky in Maine to have a law that covers them. Minnesota, we're very lucky to have a law that covers them, but most of the states in this country, unfortunately, do not cover them. So if they're being harassed, there's no one to cover them. But Title IX and the Office of Civil Rights have done some phenomenal things, and they're forcing schools around the country to tackle issues that schools don't necessarily want to tackle. And still, to this day, the Office of Civil Rights isn't just dealing with the issue of sexual orientation. They're still dealing with issues of race, people. They're still dealing with issues of gender discrimination, of religious discrimination. So, you know, I know sometimes it feels like we've come so far, and yet there's some places that it's just we haven't. We've got a long ways to go. All right. Other questions?
Mine's not really a question. Mine is more of a comment. My name's Bobby Nye. I grew up here in town, and I personally want to thank you for coming here. I'm a gay male. I went to Georges Valley, and I know tomorrow you're going over there to speak, and I am also going to come and join. And for me, it's full circle. This film has touched me in a way really deep, because I was you. I was beat every day. I had broken bones. I was harassed from junior high all the way through high school, to the point where at 15, I too tried to kill myself in school on the stage, figuring that nobody really gave a damn. And there is a problem still in this community, and a lot of people don't think that there is. We've come a long way. I'd also like to personally thank Don from Trekkers, because when Out tried to get Out in the Silence into the schools, most of the area schools' response was, we don't have a problem like that around here. We don't have gay kids in our school. But yet, on Vinyl Haven, out on one of the outer islands, they invited Out and Out in the Silence to come and be viewed. But the general response to that film and to the program was, we don't have gay kids in our schools, and we don't have a problem. So just to see the difference in where we've come just in a year and where we can go is amazing. So I personally like to thank you, and I hope that everyone really takes home with them that it does start at the bottom, starts at home, and not one kid deserves any kind of bullying and treatment where they even consider to take their own life.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'll tell you, I don't think I've been to a school that doesn't have gay and lesbian kids since I've been to Maine. So I'm going to dispel that myth right now.
I'd also like to make a comment. I grew up in Rockland and used to come to the theater here when you could smoke. Can you believe that? But I want to make two comments. One is it's coincidental that Sports Illustrated came out with an issue that's all about Title IX and what it's done for ladies in sports. And it's just amazing if it can do that in sports, what can it do for discrimination?
Absolutely.
I was discriminated against in high school, not because I was gay or bisexual or anything else, but because I was smart. And unfortunately, I went out for football and weighed 135 pounds, but I gained 50 pounds in 4 years, and I was able to beat the crap out of the people that used to pick on me. But the other comment I want to make is I became a licensed social worker in Texas, and I would work with couples, and I would tell them the thing that we're least trained for is the thing that's most important in life, and that is how to carry on a loving relationship. And I'll make a comment that the second most important thing we're least trained for is to how to parent our children. And if we have parenting classes in school, a lot of this discrimination that you saw in the film would not have happened. And I think we should move for that, and that will teach us how to work with people who are not quite like us. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I'll make a comment on that. In my home state of Minnesota, there was somebody made a comment one time that you need 200 hours of training to work with people's nails, their fingernails and their toenails, and yet 0 hours of training to be a parent. Kind of ridiculous when you think about it.
My name is Hank Lund. I've been in this community since 1958, and I've been working in the schools since for about 45 years. I am the father of a gay lady, woman, my daughter. And she is the most incredible person, and I think what I'd like to say to all of the parents who are here tonight, if you know, if you have a child who is gay or different in any way, there's only one way to work with that, and that is right here. Because I think that with the love that we can share, and give and protect and help and work with them, then I think that makes a difference. And I know that I'm very proud of my daughter, and she's now the executive director of a group called AWAB, the Affirming, Welcoming American Baptists. She works all over North America, and she grew up right here in good old Camden Town, and I'm very proud of her. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. I can't say enough to echo that message. I was extremely blessed to have the parents that I have and the support that I have from my parents and had from my parents. And people ask me all the time, what made the difference for you? And I said it was having supporting and loving adults. And I was lucky enough that those adults in my life happened to be my parents. And so there's nothing that I can even... I can't even describe how many kids I've come across that don't have that and how it tears my heart out. And I know that in Minneapolis, and I'm sure this is probably very similar around the country, but we have PFLAG is marching in our Pride Parade every year, and they are the group that gets the loudest applause. Because unfortunately, I think for every group of parents who are accepting, you probably have two or three parents who are not. And it means so much, so thank you, sir. Hi.
I'm Kelly. I have a daughter here in Rockland. I want to know, how do we teach our children from right and wrong and bullying if adults can't get the protection they need around here and teach them that it's not okay what the adults do to each other as well?
Absolutely. You bring up a very big problem is that a lot of times as adults in this country in general, we don't model the behaviors that we ask our children to exhibit, period. And I think that particularly goes with this issue. One of the things that I think people fail to realize is that bullying doesn't stop when kids graduate high school. We call it a lot of different things, but it continues on. And the reality is all bullying is somebody using their power over another to cause harm. And by that definition, we have a lot of bullies in this country. And a lot of bullies that I could name off, but I don't have enough time to name all of the Republican bullies that I can think of. So, and they're not all Republicans. We've got some Democratic bullies as well, unfortunately. But you bring up a really great point, and I think that's one of the reasons why we have to work for GLBT equality for adults, and we have to work for emulating the behaviors that we want to see in our children. I had a principal one time in a very small town in northern Minnesota, and I went into a school, and I went into his office, and he greeted me, and he had a big pride flag on his wall, and I was kind of blown away, and I'd heard that there was a principal in the school district that had a gay son, and I made the assumption that it was him, which I was wrong about. I later found out it was the junior high principal that had the gay son. But one of the things he told me is that he worked in a different school district for many years, and he knew two a gay man and a lesbian in that school who both were uncomfortable being out and constantly were limiting their experience with their children and limiting their experiences with their other adults in the building. And he said when he became a principal, he knew the most important thing he could do for his students to make them feel comfortable was to make sure all of his staff felt comfortable. Because if the staff did, he knew the students would. And I'll tell you, I was at another community probably an hour away, very similar in size, very similar in composition. And when I met with the Gay Straight Alliance in that school, all I heard about was the harassment that they were receiving and about how the teachers didn't respond, the administrators didn't respond. And when I met with the kids in the school, with this principal, with the Gay Pride Flag, all I heard about was the great day of silence they had, how many kids participated, how great it is to have teachers that are out and living honest lives in their schools, and they have great role models. And so I think that goes right to the heart of what you're saying, is we have to model those behaviors. And it's not just a gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgender issue. It is an issue about so many other things. And it is an issue about power, and it's an issue about a lot of different dynamics. But we absolutely, we have to start being the change that we seek in the world, as Gandhi said. And so it starts with every one of us. And one of the things today I put on my Facebook after I read about the young woman in Minnesota who took her own life was that it is time that every single person does everything they can to make sure our schools are safe. You know, I've been doing this work for 2 years, and I'm very passionate about it. But I see so many people that care and they like things on Facebook, but that's it. That's all they're doing. And if all you're going to do is like something, what's the point? I'm going to ask everybody here, I need you to go and write a letter to your school, send an email to the school that you went to talking about what life was like when you were there, because I can guarantee you it probably wasn't that great for a lot of kids and for a lot of reasons. I want to encourage you to volunteer and get involved in great organizations like Out Here. And I also want to encourage you to give money. And all of those things can go a long way to changing things. But we all need to do our part. Because the reality is these kids, whether we have our own in these schools, they're our future generation. And one of the things that I am excited about is if we can teach these kids to respect each other and to stop and deal with harassment and all kinds of injustice when they see it, imagine the kind of world that they will create when they're in charge. Imagine the kind of world that we'll live in when they inherit this world and decide that we're not going to have any more Darfurs, that we're not going to have another Holocaust, that we're not going to let people get harassed and bullied. One of the things that you heard at the beginning was that, before my introduction, was that I was chosen as a human rights defender by the RF Kennedy Center. And one of the things that I'm most proud of from that, from being chosen for that, is they're elevating this issue of student safety to a human right. It is something that we rarely hear when we're talking about this issue. But they're saying it's a basic human right that our kids should be safe in school. And one of the things I thought of when I thought about this whole thing was that if we had a report about the things happening in our schools and it was coming out of Russia or Iran or China, do you think that we'd have outrage from the highest levels of this government and calls for them to deal with their issues and their problems? And yet this is happening right here in our very own schools, and too often we have silence. Too often we have people that are complicit in this. One of the young people today said that he remembers being in classroom and having kids torment him and teachers not do a thing. He was kicked on a playground and a teacher walked away when she saw it. We absolutely need to be modeling the behaviors we want to see in our kids. One more question.
Hi. I was just wondering, did the people who ever bullied you ever be held accountable for what they did to you?
It's a good question. And I think the final thing I'll share is exactly that. I think that Roy Grandy, who was in the film, was one of my biggest tormentors and who testified at the trial. You all saw that. I think that Roy was also a victim. Roy was told in the 7th grade that what he was doing to me by calling me names was okay. He was told in the 8th grade that hitting me was okay because I was gay. And he was told in high school that beating me up was okay. And when Roy was 19 and him and his friends saw somebody in Superior, Wisconsin on the street that they thought was gay and beat the crap out of that guy and put him in the hospital, Roy quickly found out that wasn't okay, and he spent 3.5 years in prison, which is where he was when the trial happened. And so in some ways, yes, Roy eventually got held accountable for what he did. But I think if somebody had told Roy a lot sooner that it wasn't okay to treat people that were different with that kind of disrespect, Roy may not be in jail. Roy may have his own family and be leading a productive life right now. And so ultimately, I think the three people who were really responsible were held accountable in a sense that their public reputations were ruined, and that at least for the one who I felt most responsible for everything, Mary Podlesny, she will go down in history in this country as one of the biggest bigots in our public education system. And for that, I think she's held accountable. So I want to thank everybody for coming tonight, and thank you for caring enough about this issue to come out on a wonderful main night and listen to the film and listen to my message. I will be next door at the gallery, and I also want to let you know that if you had questions that you didn't get answered tonight, I am on Facebook, and please feel free to friend me and then ask me questions. If you like me on my fan page, you cannot do anything, so you're welcome to do it, but it's pointless, I tell you. So friend me, ask me questions. I answer every single message personally, and I'd be happy to get back to everybody when I get a chance, because your kids are keeping me very, very busy. So thank you.
You've been listening to Speaking in Maine here on MPBN Radio. Today's speaker was Jamie Nimbosny, an advocate for bullied students across the United States and subject of the Southern Poverty Law Center documentary Bullied, A Student, A School, and A Case That Made History. Nimbosny was in Maine for a week speaking to students at various schools across the state and gave this address at the Strand Theater in Rockland. His talk was sponsored by Out As I Want to Be. You can listen to this program again at your convenience by accessing it on our website, mpbn.net. Click on Audio on Demand or Podcast to access this program, as well as many other archived Speaking in Maine programs. Charles Beck is the executive producer of this series. For Speaking in Maine, I'm Lindsay Maynard.